A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's one of those questions that sounds niche until you realize it's quietly shaping the price and speed of everything you order. He's pointing at pallet breaking, that moment when a neatly stacked pallet of freight has to be torn apart and rebuilt because the next leg of the journey demands a different configuration. We've talked about how aircraft compatibility avoids this, but Daniel's question is bigger. When does pallet breaking actually become necessary? Why has it resisted automation when so much of the supply chain hasn't? And what's coming that might finally kill it?
The timing's right because this is genuinely the last big frontier where human hands still dominate. Warehouses got automated, sortation centers got automated, route optimization is all algorithms now. But pallet breaking? Still a person with a box cutter and a scanner, pulling boxes one at a time. The most expensive touch in the whole chain.
By expensive, you mean the literal per-touch cost.
A single touch, one human picking up one box and moving it, costs somewhere between 30 and 50 cents in labor. That doesn't sound like much until you realize a single pallet break can involve 50 to 200 individual touches. You're looking at $15 to $100 just to dismantle and rebuild one pallet. Multiply by the millions of pallets moving through cross-docks every day, and the global cost is in the billions annually.
Which is wild when you think about it. That box traveled thousands of miles by ship or air for pennies, and then the most expensive part of the journey is a guy in a warehouse moving it 6 feet.
That's the absurdity at the heart of this. The flight from Shenzhen to Dubai might cost a few cents per item. The pallet break at the UAE consolidation hub costs 30 times that. It's the logistics equivalent of spending more on the parking than the dinner.
Let's define the thing before we tear into it. Pallet breaking? What are we actually talking about?
It's the process of disassembling a unitized pallet of freight into individual parcels or smaller sub-pallets. A pallet arrives as this cohesive block, shrink-wrapped, strapped, everything stacked and stable. And someone has to take it apart because the next leg of the journey needs those items in a different arrangement. Different pallet size, different mix of destinations, different transport mode. The pallet, as it exists, can't move forward in its current form.
Unitized is the key word there. The whole point of pallets is that you move them as one thing. One forklift move, one scan, one unit of freight. Breaking that unit is an act of violence against the whole philosophy of palletization.
Pallets exist to eliminate touches. The entire logistics industry spent decades saying, "Don't touch the individual box, move the pallet." And then pallet breaking is the moment where you admit defeat and say, "Okay, now we have to touch every single box."
When does that moment of defeat actually arrive? What forces it?
Three main scenarios. First, modal changes. When freight moves from air to ground, or ground to air, or between different aircraft types. An LD3 container that fits in the 707 belly hold doesn't fit on a 707 freighter that uses PMC pallets. The footprints are different. The locking systems are different. The weight distribution requirements are different. You can't just slide one container onto the other aircraft. You have to break it down and rebuild.
This is the thing we touched on in the aircraft compatibility discussion. If the planes use the same unit load devices, you skip the break entirely. That's the game changer.
Right, but that compatibility is rare. Most air freight moves through multiple aircraft types and ground vehicles. The second scenario is final mile disaggregation. A pallet arrives at a regional hub, say a DHL facility outside Tel Aviv, and it's full of packages for 50 different addresses across the city. That pallet has to be broken so the individual parcels can be sorted onto the right delivery vans.
Which is the most intuitive one? Your package doesn't live on a pallet when it hits your doorstep.
The third scenario is the one Daniel's particularly interested in, cross-dock reconsolidation. This is what happens at the UAE consolidation node. Freight from multiple Chinese factories arrives on multiple pallets, all destined for Israel. But those pallets aren't organized by Israeli destination city, they're organized by which factory shipped them. So at the cross dock, you break all those pallets and recombine the items into new pallets that are organized by where they're going in Israel. Haifa gets one pallet, Jerusalem gets another, Tel Aviv gets three.
You're essentially sorting at the pallet level, breaking multiple inbound pallets to build multiple outbound pallets with different logic.
That's where the complexity explodes. It's not just taking one pallet apart and putting it back together the same way. It's taking 10 pallets apart and building 15 new ones, each with a different mix of items from different original pallets. The permutations are enormous.
Which brings us to why this has been so hard to automate. Because, on paper, this sounds like the kind of thing robots should be great at. Repetitive, physical, high volume.
That's the misconception most people have. Pallet breaking looks simple. It's just moving boxes. But the reality is, it's one of the hardest perception and manipulation problems in robotics. Here's why. A pallet arrives with mixed SKUs, different box sizes, different weights, different shapes, different materials. Some boxes are rigid, some are flimsy. Some items are shrink-wrapped together in bundles. There might be fragile items mixed in with heavy ones. The stacking pattern is often irregular, maybe optimized for stability during transit, but terrible for robotic extraction.
The robot can't just follow a pattern. It has to see and understand what it's looking at.
In real time, with near-perfect accuracy. It has to identify each individual item, determine its dimensions and orientation, figure out where to grip it, and gripping is its own nightmare because a vacuum gripper that works on a flat cardboard box fails on a shrink-wrapped bundle of clothing, and then extract it without destabilizing the rest of the stack. One wrong move, and the whole pallet collapses.
Which for a human is annoying but manageable. For a robot, that's a failure state that stops the whole operation.
Humans are incredibly good at this. We have stereoscopic vision, we have tactile feedback, we can feel when a box is starting to slip or when the stack is shifting. We make micro adjustments without thinking. A robot has to be programmed for every contingency, and the contingencies are essentially infinite when you're dealing with mixed freight.
There's also the labeling problem, right? The robot has to read the label to know where the box is going, and labels aren't always conveniently placed.
Labels can be on any face of the box. They can be partially obscured by strapping or shrink wrap. They can be damaged or wrinkled. A human picks up the box, rotates it, finds the label. A robot needs multiple cameras and the ability to manipulate the box to find the label, all while maintaining throughput. Current bin picking systems struggle with this at scale.
Let's put some numbers on the scale of the problem. You mentioned 50 to 200 touches per pallet.
That's for a standard mixed pallet. At a major cross-dock like the DHL facility in Leipzig, they're processing thousands of pallets daily. The labor cost alone is staggering, but there's also the throughput bottleneck. Humans can only move so fast. They get tired, they make errors, they get injured. Pallet breaking is physically demanding work, repetitive lifting, twisting, reaching. Injury rates are high.
Which means turnover is high, training costs are ongoing. And the whole operation is fragile in a way that automated systems aren't.
This is the thing that drives logistics operators crazy. They've automated everything around the pallet break. The conveyors, the sorters, the tracking systems, the route optimization. And then right in the middle of this gleaming automated facility, there's a zone where people are just pulling boxes off pallets by hand. It's the human-shaped hole in an otherwise robotic system.
All right. So that's the problem. What's actually being done about it? What's coming?
Three categories of innovation, and they're all happening in parallel. The first is the direct approach, robotic depalletizing systems with computer vision. Companies like Plus One Robotics, Dexterity, and Pfizer are deploying systems that use 3D cameras and deep learning to identify and grasp individual boxes from mixed pallets.
These are actually in the field, not just lab projects.
Plus One Robotics has their Pick One system running at a DHL cross-dock in Leipzig, handling over 600 parcels per hour with a 99.5% pick success rate. That's a real number from a real facility. The system uses a combination of 3D vision and AI to identify boxes, determine the optimal grip point, and extract them. When it encounters something it can't handle, an odd shape, a damaged box, something it's not confident about, it flags a human operator for remote intervention.
Remote intervention, meaning a person sitting somewhere else, not on the floor.
That's the key insight from Plus One Robotics. They call it human in the loop, but it's more like human above the loop. The robot handles the routine 80% of picks, and when it hits an edge case, a remote operator takes over for that one pick, then hands control back to the robot. The operator might be in a different building, a different city, even a different country.
Which changes the labor economics completely. One remote operator can oversee multiple robots across multiple facilities.
That's where the cost savings come from. You're not eliminating human judgment. You're decoupling it from physical presence.
What about the gripping problem? You mentioned vacuum grippers failing on certain surfaces.
That's been one of the biggest breakthroughs. The latest systems use hybrid grippers, a combination of vacuum suction cups and mechanical fingers. The vision system identifies the surface type and selects the appropriate gripping mode on the fly. A flat cardboard box gets vacuum, a shrink-wrapped bundle gets mechanical fingers, a mixed surface might get both. Dexterity has been particularly good at this. Their system can switch gripping strategies between picks without retooling.
That's the direct approach. Attack the pallet-breaking problem head-on with better robots. What's the second category?
The second approach is more interesting to me because it tries to bypass pallet breaking entirely. It's called pallet-to-vehicle direct loading. Instead of breaking a pallet at the cross-dock, a mobile robot takes the entire intact pallet to a dock door, and only the boxes that need to be diverted to a different destination get touched. Everything else stays on the pallet and goes straight onto the outbound truck or aircraft.
You're not eliminating touches. You're being surgical about which touches you perform.
That reduces total touches by 60 to 80%. Think about it. If a pallet is 80% destined for Tel Aviv and 20% for Haifa, you don't break the whole pallet. You pull off the Haifa boxes and leave the rest intact. The pallet stays unitized for the majority of its journey.
Which requires knowing the destination mix before the pallet arrives at the cross-dock.
That brings us to the third innovation, pre-consolidation at origin. This is the idea of building destination-ready pallets at the factory or first-mile warehouse so they never need to be broken downstream. If you know before the pallet is built that these items are going to Jerusalem and those items are going to Haifa, you build two separate pallets at the source.
Which sounds obvious, but the reason it hasn't happened is that you need real-time visibility of downstream demand at the moment of pallet building.
Historically, the factory doesn't know where individual items are going. They're building pallets for a consolidation center, and the routing decisions happen later. But with AI demand forecasting and real-time order data, you can predict destination mixes before the pallet is built. Kane Yao is piloting this in their smart warehouse in Hangzhou, and they've reduced downstream pallet breaking by 40%.
40% is substantial. That's not a marginal improvement.
It's massive. And the technology to do this isn't exotic. It's AI forecasting models that have been around for years applied to the pallet building process. The innovation is in the integration, not the algorithms.
You've got three approaches. Better robots for when breaking is unavoidable, surgical minimal touch systems, and pre-consolidation to avoid breaking entirely. What's the timeline on these converging?
This is where the misconception busting comes in. A lot of coverage makes it sound like fully autonomous cross-docks are just around the corner. They're not. The current best-in-class systems handle about 80% of cases autonomously, but that remaining 20% is the long tail of edge cases. Oddly shaped items, shrink-wrapped bundles, fragile goods, damaged packaging, unusual stacking patterns. Full autonomy at scale is probably 3 to 5 years out, so we're looking at 2029 to 2031.
In the meantime, the hybrid model dominates.
The hybrid model is the real story for the next few years. Systems that handle 80% of volume robotically and hand off the tricky 20% to humans, either on-site or remote. That cuts labor costs by 60% while maintaining the flexibility to handle edge cases. It's not as sexy as full autonomy, but it's where the actual ROI lives.
Because you're not spending billions trying to solve the last 20%, which is always where the costs explode.
That's the automation trap in every industry. The first 80% is relatively straightforward. The next 15% is hard but achievable. The last 5% costs more than the first 95% combined. Logistics operators are getting smart about this. They're designing systems that gracefully hand off exceptions to humans rather than trying to automate everything.
Which is a lesson that applies far beyond pallet breaking. The winners in automation are the ones who design for human-machine collaboration, not human replacement.
That's the broader insight here. The pallet-breaking problem is a microcosm of the whole automation challenge. It looks simple, it's actually incredibly complex, and the solution isn't a better robot, it's a better system that knows when to use a robot and when to use a human.
Let me pull on the pre-consolidation thread for a moment. You mentioned Kanyar's 40% reduction. What's actually happening in that Hangzhou warehouse?
Traditionally, a factory in Yiwu produces a bunch of consumer goods, phone cases, USB cables, whatever, and they palletize by production batch. All the phone cases go on one pallet, all the cables on another. Those pallets go to a consolidation center, where they're broken and recombined with items from other factories into destination-specific pallets. What Kanyao is doing differently is ingesting order data before the pallets are built. They know, before the items leave the factory, that 60% of these phone cases are going to Tel Aviv, 30% to Haifa, 10% to Be'er Sheva. So they build three pallets at the source instead of one.
Which requires coordination between the factory, the logistics provider, and the end marketplace.
The factory's warehouse management system has to talk to Kanyao's demand forecasting system, which has to talk to AliExpress's order data. That's a lot of APIs and a lot of trust. But once it's working, the downstream savings are enormous. Fewer touches, less handling damage, faster transit times, lower labor costs.
It shifts the complexity upstream to where it's cheaper to manage. Better to solve the problem at the factory than at the cross-dock.
That's the principle. Move the intelligence as far upstream as possible. The earlier you know where something is going, the fewer times you have to touch it.
What about the aircraft compatibility angle Daniel mentioned? How does that interact with all this?
It's the same logic applied to air freight. If you're moving an LD3 container from a passenger aircraft belly hold, and the next leg is on a freighter that uses PMC pallets, you have to break the container. But if both aircraft use the same unit load device, either because they're the same aircraft type, or because the operator has standardized their fleet, the container moves intact. No break, no touches, no cost.
Which is why fleet standardization is such a big deal for cargo operators. It's not just about maintenance and pilot training. It's about eliminating pallet breaks across the network.
This is where the consolidation node strategy gets really clever. If you're Kanyao and you're routing everything through a UAE hub, you can control which aircraft types serve which legs. You can design the network so that pallet breaks only happen where you've invested in the automation to handle them efficiently. The break becomes a planned event rather than an expensive surprise.
The UAE node isn't just a geographic convenience. It's a controlled environment for managing the pallet breaking problem.
And as the automation improves, the economics of that node keep getting better. Cheaper pallet breaking means you can do more granular routing, which means faster delivery to smaller markets, which means more customers, which means more volume, which means even better economies of scale. It's a virtuous cycle.
Let's talk about some of the other players in the robotics space. You mentioned Dexterity and Fizzer alongside Plus One Robotics. What differentiates them?
Dexterity is focused on what they call full task robots, systems that don't just pick, but also place, pack, and palletize. Their differentiator is the hybrid gripper intelligence I mentioned, but also their software layer that handles task planning. The robot doesn't just grab a box, it knows where that box needs to go and plans the most efficient sequence of moves to get it there.
It's thinking several steps ahead.
And Fizzer is interesting because they're a software-only play. They don't build robots, they build the vision and decision-making software that runs on other companies' hardware. Their system can be retrofitted onto existing robotic arms, which lowers the barrier to entry for logistics operators who already have automation infrastructure.
Which is smart. Don't make them rip out their existing robots, just upgrade the brains.
That software-centric approach means they can iterate faster. New grasping strategies, better object recognition, improved edge case handling, it's all software updates. The hardware stays the same.
What about the cost of these systems? You mentioned the per-touch labor cost, but what's the capital expenditure for a robotic depalletizing cell?
A fully equipped cell with vision, gripping, and safety systems runs somewhere between $150,000 and $300,000, depending on the complexity and throughput requirements. That sounds like a lot until you do the math. If that cell handles 600 parcels per hour and runs two shifts, It's processing about 2.5 million parcels per year. At 30 cents of labor cost avoided per parcel, that's $750,000 in annual savings. The system pays for itself in well under a year.
That's a compelling business case, even before you factor in reduced injury rates and lower turnover.
The ROI gets better as the technology improves. Higher pick rates, fewer human interventions, longer operational hours. The trajectory is clear.
For logistics operators listening to this, what's the practical takeaway for the next 3 years?
Don't wait for full autonomy. The biggest ROI opportunity right now is hybrid systems. Deploy robotic depalletizing for the 80% of volume that's routine and staff the exceptions with humans. You'll cut labor costs by 60% or more while maintaining the flexibility to handle whatever weird stuff shows up on a pallet.
For shippers, the people actually sending the freight?
Invest in pre-consolidation. Building destination. Ready pallets at origin is lower tech than robotic depalletizing, but arguably higher impact. It reduces touches upstream, avoids the complexity of retrofitting cross-docks, and improves delivery speed. You don't need robots to do it. You need better data integration and demand forecasting. That's a software problem, not a hardware problem.
Which is easier to solve?
And the big players are already doing it. Kanyao, Amazon, DHL, they're all building pre-consolidation capabilities. The competitive advantage is shifting from who has the best cross-dock automation to who can avoid cross-dock touches entirely.
That's a fundamental shift in how you think about logistics efficiency. The best touch is the one that never happens.
That's been the principle all along. Minimize touches. We're just getting better at actually achieving it.
What happens when pallet breaking is finally solved? What's the next bottleneck?
That's the question, isn't it? My bet is that the bottleneck shifts to final mile sortation. If you can move pallets intact all the way to the last cross-dock before delivery, the breaking and sorting has to happen somewhere, and that somewhere is going to be closer to the end customer. Which means smaller facilities, more constrained spaces, more complex routing.
You're not eliminating the problem. You're pushing it downstream where it's harder to solve at scale.
Or you're pushing it to a place where different solutions apply. Final mile sortation might be better suited to smaller, cheaper robotic systems, collaborative robots rather than industrial scale cells. The technology adapts to the context.
That's the other elephant in the room. E-commerce return rates are 20 to 30% in some categories. Every return is a pallet break in reverse.
Returns are a whole separate nightmare. Items come back in unpredictable condition, often in different packaging, sometimes not even the same item that was shipped. The perception and manipulation challenges are even harder than outbound pallet breaking. That's probably the frontier after this frontier.
The supply chain efficiency journey never actually ends. You just keep finding new bottlenecks.
Which is what makes it fascinating. It's not a problem to be solved once, it's a constantly evolving optimization challenge. And the people who are good at it are the ones who understand that perfection is impossible, but incremental improvement is always available.
All right, let's land this. What's the single thing you want listeners to take away about pallet breaking?
That is the perfect example of why the hardest problems in automation aren't the ones that look hard. Pallet breaking looks like a simple manual task, but it's actually a perception, manipulation, and decision-making challenge that pushes the limits of current robotics. And the solution isn't a better robot. It's a combination of better robots, smarter pre-consolidation, and hybrid systems that know when to hand off to humans.
The timeline isn't tomorrow, but it's not distant either. Real systems are in the field right now, delivering real savings.
The DHL facility in Leipzig is doing it today. Kanyao's Hangzhou warehouse is doing it today. This isn't science fiction. It's operational reality at the leading edge. The question is how fast it diffuses through the rest of the industry.
That diffusion is what determines whether your next package arrives in 4 days or two. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1930s, lighthouse keepers in the Outer Hebrides were widely believed to suffer from a condition called ferological madness, a theory, now abandoned, that prolonged exposure to the rhythmic sweep of the beacon caused a specific form of hallucinatory insanity. The British Lighthouse Authority spent nearly a decade designing counter-rotating lenses to neutralize the hypnotic effect before a Scottish physician pointed out that the keepers were simply sleep-deprived and drinking too much.
Counter-rotating lenses. That's a lot of engineering to solve a problem that was just whiskey.
the things we build to avoid the obvious answer.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flemingtop. If you want more episodes, find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We're back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.